part by a grant from the Art Mart in the Lincoln Square Mall, Urbana. The Art Mart is pleased to support public radio in East Central Illinois. Programming on WILL AM is made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, where U of I students appear on stage in the Department of Theater productions of Shakespeare's King Lear and the original improvisatory piece Lush Life, the School of Music production of Mozart's opera Don Giovanni, and the Department of Dance presentation November Playhouse Dance. For more information, visit KrannertCenter.com. AM 580 thanks Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors for its support of Focus 580. Overhead Doors is pleased to support public radio in Central Illinois on behalf of its customers and business associates.
Good morning and welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk show. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Hank Spies is here today to answer questions dealing with home maintenance. This is something that we do on the program every month. It's always on a Monday. It's one of those things that we built into the schedule a long time ago because we knew that people would always have questions. And we like to try to make this program as useful as possible for people who are listening. We do this throughout the year, 10 hours a week. All those hours every month to give you the opportunity to be involved in the station, to ask questions, to, we hope, come away with useful information. Sometimes we hope we do programs that can give you a little bit better understanding of the world and all of that commercial free. But that's only commercial free because people like you can support the station with your dollars. This is one of those times that we sit down in front of the microphone and we remind you just how important your support is to the station. Yes, we get some federal funds, but over time, we are getting less and less of that kind of money, and the only place that we can turn to make up the difference is to people who listen to the station. This is now your opportunity to call in and make a pledge of support to Focus 580 and other shows that you value that are here on WILL Radio. Right now, you can do that by calling 244-9455 and making a direct financial contribution. That means giving us some money, writing a check, putting it on your credit card, doing it on installments, however you want to do that. You can talk about that with the volunteer who's ready to take the call. But the important thing is if you're not a supporter of the station, that we hear from you. If you value the programs, they are here for you all those days because somebody is helping to pay the bills. And if you're not among the group of folks that we call the friends at WILL, well, we hope that you would change that. Maybe it's time for you to renew. Please do that. But if you've never supported the station before, maybe you could sign on at the basic membership level, which is just $40. And for that, with our thanks, you get our program guide and the good feeling that comes with knowing that you support a resource that you value. So that's a good thing for you to start off your week with. If you haven't done it, you've been thinking about it, 244-9455 right now, you can make a call. Now, if you want to call in and talk with Hank Spies, it's 333-9455. It's a different number. You'll come right here to the program. No one will grab you on the way and try to get you to pledge. Of course, we hope that you will, but that is not required. 333-9455 for Champaign-Urbana and toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, thank you very much for being here.
Yeah, good morning. Good to be here.
How many years now has it been?
23
years. Hank Spies has been doing this with us for 23 years, and we appreciate all of that, all of those many hours that he has given us over those many years. It's a very popular show here, so I'm sure we'll get lots of calls. We got someone, in fact, here ready to go, and we'll start out with line number one in Champaign.
Hello, good morning.
Yes.
I had two quick questions. Number one, I just built a house, and there was about a 2-inch hole drilled to let the gas line in, and that's about a 1.5-inch pipe. I sealed that with silicone caulk, and somebody said that that can corrode metal, and I looked on the back of the package, and it said corrodes some metals. Do I have anything to worry about?
Probably not. Basically, you've got a steel line going through there, I assume.
It looks like there's like almost like stainless steel sheath on the outside of it.
Yeah, it might. If it was copper, it might corrode, but steel, I don't think you've got any problems.
Okay, and also on this house, there are little vents in the crawl spaces. I assume you close them in the winter and you open them in the summer, but I'm not always correct on the sort of thing.
Well, it all depends on how damp your crawl space is. If your crawl space is dry, you can leave them closed all year.
Uh-huh.
Otherwise, yes, we normally close them in the wintertime.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
But that silicone stuff, should I look for anything?
Basically, is there any water or dampness or anything down there, that any condensation, water under the plastic, and there'd better be plastic down in the crawl space, that sort of thing. So basically, as long as the top of the plastic stays dry, you're in good shape.
Okay, no, I'm sorry. I jumped back to the silicone seal thing.
Oh.
Do I have to monitor that or watch it, or what should I look for or anything?
Take a look at it every year or two, but no, nothing is going to happen drastically.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right, thanks. And you just went and touched on the thing that I was going to raise if you didn't mention it, because periodically, all through as long as we've been doing this, we hear occasionally from people who have crawl spaces and have moisture problems in the house. And the first thing you say to them, is there plastic down in the crawl space? And in many cases, they come back and they say, well, no. So anybody who's got a crawl space, should have plastic down.
The entire soil surface should be covered with plastic. Actually, it would be best if it lapped up the foundation about 3 inches or so at the edges. But joints don't have to be sealed. They can just be lapped 6 inches or so. You don't have to get down there with 5 rolls of duct tape and hook things together. But the entire soil surface should be covered.
Okay. And then the idea is that any moisture that's in the soil, instead of coming up and getting into the house, it's going to come up, hit that plastic. It'll be a vapor barrier and then would go down the other way.
If you don't have plastic, you can do an interesting experiment. You take about 2 feet square of plastic and put it down there, and within an hour, you'll have water dripping off the bottom of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Very good. Well, let's go on here. Next is Urbana, line 2. Hello.
Yes, I'm interested in asphalting my driveway. Mm-hmm. And right now, it's a sort of a gravel base that's built up over the years. And it's about 600 square feet. And I have a large tree, spruce tree, and another tree, a black locust, on one end of it. And I wondered, first, would tree roots cause a problem once it's laid?
They can cause it to heave up and crack, yes.
Is that true of particular trees or just in general?
Yes, it varies with variety, and I'm sorry, I'm not enough of a tree man to tell you which ones are the worst.
Yeah.
I know that the silver maples do a real good job of it.
How thick should that asphalt be?
Oh, generally speaking, we're looking at 3 or 4 inches because you've got a good solid base there.
Yeah.
If you didn't have that solid base, it'd have to be thicker. Otherwise, your next garbage truck will go through it.
Okay. Is there a problem of doing it this time of year? That is, is it getting too cold to start?
No, I don't think there's any problem there.
Okay. Now, do they have to treat that again after they lay it with anything? I heard something about in a couple of weeks.
Usually you put a sealer on it. The main thing is to let the solvents out, and you put a sealer on so that any gasoline or oils dripping from your vehicles don't start eating into it.
Okay. The sealer would go on when?
Shortly after within a few weeks of the time the thing is laid, and you'll have to redo it about every couple of 2 or 3 years, probably.
Okay. When they put the sealer down, can they do that in cold weather? Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering if I had it done this week, then I've got another 2 weeks.
No, this is, let's put it this way. We wouldn't want to do it when it was frozen.
Yeah.
Otherwise, no problem.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for the call. Our guest this morning here on Focus 580 is Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He is on this program once a month and has been for a long time. We do it on a Monday on the 10 o'clock hour, and it's your opportunity to call in and ask questions about home maintenance. He knows a lot about single-family home and all the various pieces and parts. So if you're having a problem or something needs to be fixed or you're thinking about making some changes and you need some advice, you can call us. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Southern Illinois, our next caller is in Southern Illinois on our toll-free line 4. Hello.
Hi, Hank. I know this is redundant, but it's a crawl space question again.
Sure.
Last week, the WILL had a home energy expert, or the week before, who said there's been some question about whether to put plastic down underneath because of mildew problems. And he did say to put blue board around the foundation of the walls. And then my husband talked to a contractor who said to put insulation underneath the floorboards, like batting.
No. Please do not do that.
Do not do that?
No.
Why is that?
Basically, you are insulating the floor from all the heat that comes off your heat register, heat ducts that are down there. It keeps the crawl space colder. You're more likely to get frozen pipes. And if you use an insulation with a vapor barrier, if we have one on the bottom and one on the top, then we do have a moisture problem down there. So insulation in the floor is never a good idea.
How do you keep the floors warm then?
You're basically, what you do is insulate the crawl space walls.
Okay.
And the soil in the crawl space in this area stays, in the mid-50s year-round. So it's not very, you're not losing a heck of a lot of heat that way. And you are picking up what you are losing from the ductwork that's down there and so on. So, no, I would not.
So close the ducts and maybe insulate the vents on the ducts or cover them up with foam or something?
You can insulate. No, we don't want to insulate the ducts because the heat we're getting from the duct is what that we're losing is what's keeping the crawl space warm. Now, what we want to do is insulate the perimeter of the crawl space so this heat is not lost to the dirt outside.
With a blue board.
Blue board is fine.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks. You still, however, feel that no matter what else you do, that you would still recommend that there would be plastic over
absolutely.
On the dirt.
I've never run into a situation where the plastic on the dirt caused a problem. Now, if you put a second layer of plastic and the bottom of the floor, then you can have a problem because you're trapping moisture between the two.
Uh-huh.
But I have never found any reason to not have plastic on the dirt surface.
Okay. Other callers here back in the area where we are. Line number one is next in Champaign.
Good morning, and I have to say you gave me that advice about the crawl space many years ago, and it's been perfect.
Good.
Two questions. This one has to do with a concrete driveway, so it's exterior that has developed cracks. What do you recommend for sealing those cracks?
They have crack sealers that you can get in gallon jugs with a little spout on them that lets you pour them in the cracks, and that will help.
Okay. And then my second question has to do with an air conditioner that was installed into a wall, so there it's not airtight. And I cannot seem to find anything that I put on either the inside or the outside that blocks the air from getting back into the house because the edges of it aren't tight. Is there something that is already made, or what can I make something out of that would do that for me?
Well, you probably can use our ever-handy duct tape to seal things up, or the little foam in a can things you can seal it in that way, but that means you never take it out.
And I don't take it out, but you know how you have the little accordion things that expand, and those aren't really airtight.
No, they are not.
So I wanted to put something on either the inside or the outside that would block the air from getting into the room.
I don't know of anything short of taping a piece of plastic over it.
Well, it's just not very pretty, and I was trying to make
You're absolutely correct. It's not very pretty.
Okay.
Thank
you very much.
The only other thing you can do would be to take the accordion pleated things off and cut some pieces of plastic foam rigid to fit into those things and then tape those down.
Okay. Well, I'll keep trying.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you. No, I have lived in places, I guess I'm thinking of apartments that I have lived in that had windows that were pretty leaky and have, in some of those places, used this shrink plastic stuff that you put over the windows and then you use your hair dryer or something and it shrinks up and it fits tight. And I always wondered, was that really doing anything?
Oh, absolutely.
It does.
Absolutely. This is as good a set of storm window.
Oh, okay. So particularly if you don't have good...
A good seal good around seal. The windows and so on. There's also another product that's basically a removable caulk. It comes in a rope caulk and you can tuck it in, mm-hmm. and then next spring grab one end of it and pull, and it all comes back out again. Probably the most common trade name is Mortite, M-O-R-T-I-T-E, and that seems to work if you want something that's easily removable. Mm. But your bit of shrink wrapping overleaf window has worked just fine. You still end up with some adhesive residue from the tape on the woodwork and this kind of thing.
Yeah. How much cold air may be coming in around the rough opening in the wall that the window is in that you wouldn't cover with that kind of operation?
That depends on how good the builder was when he built the house. Mm-hmm. When we go to really tighten up a house, all we do is take the interior trim off around the window and then foam that crack and seal it up and then put the trim back down. Mm-hmm. But it can be pretty substantial. When you get one where the curtains blow when the window's shut, that's what's happening.
Uh-huh. Okay. So in some cases, you might even be able to go and just put your hand up around the frame and feel a draft.
Right, or a little smoke, a cigarette smoke or something, rather it'll blow. That's probably where your problem is coming from.
All right. Champagne, another Champagne caller. This is line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
We live out in the Cherry Hill subdivision, to give you an idea. Hank, I know you've mm-hmm. inspected homes out there. And our home is about approximately 11 years old, Hallbeck construction. My question is this. With carpeting in a home, all the wall-to-wall carpeting that's included in those homes, what is a rule of thumb point in time where one thinks about changing it out totally? The reason I ask the question is we've cleaned it with different cleaners locally here. My wife notices that it looks like it's losing its, its body, and it gets dirtier even quicker now every time we clean it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, much depends upon what material the carpet is made of and how much foot traffic you have, whether you have pets that are tracking things in and this sort of thing. It's not at all unusual to look at replacement in 12 to 15 years.
Okay. So that's considered good wear then for 12 years?
Yeah. Now, I mean, if you had $40 a yard wool carpeting, it may last 20, but that's not what most of them have.
Okay. And is there any particular method of cleaning that's better for carpeting that you prefer over another?
Not really. I've had various commercial companies do it, and we've used carpet machines that we have owned and this sort of thing. And they still will pick up a certain amount of dirt that you're not going to get out.
Very good. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for the call. Let's go to line number three next. Caller in Urbana. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, I heard on one of your programs, I'm in one of WIL's programs, but I'm not sure of that air leakage from the crawl space was a terrible energy loser, and yet all of the crawl spaces that I've known have had louvers built into them to allow air circulation. So what's the score?
Well, you need to close the louvers in the wintertime. Generally speaking, as I indicated earlier, if the crawl space is dry.
No, not crawl space. I'm talking about attic space.
Oh, attic.
Yes.
Okay, you definitely need attic ventilation.
That's what I thought.
And you can it's almost impossible to have too much.
Okay, so this indicated that I should close them all off, and that's crazy.
That's right. No, we need the attic ventilation more in the wintertime than we do in the summer.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay.
All right. Well, see, now that seems, some people might seem counterintuitive. They might think, well, it's more important in the summertime because the attic gets hot. Mm-hmm. And then that makes a greater burden on your cooling system in the house, and it may make it hotter in the upstairs. And why is it you need it more in the wintertime?
To get rid of any moisture. If you have any moisture in the house, it will condense on the cold surfaces. The cold surface in this case often being the bottom of the roof or other things up in the attic, so we need to be able to vent that out so that we do not have. I've gone up into attics and found where nail points from the shingles stuck through, and there's a white ball of frost the size of a golf ball there because the moisture wasn't getting away. And then when the sun comes out, the frost melts, and I get this phone call saying, my ceiling is leaking, but it isn't raining. So we definitely need this attic ventilation, particularly in the wintertime. And that's why one of these thermostatically controlled fans works fine to help reduce cooling load in the summer. Generally speaking, you'd be better off adding more insulation instead with no operating cost. But your real problem is they don't run in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
So we really ought to put a timer on them that runs them, a minute every half hour or something or other to provide the attic ventilation in the wintertime to get rid of the moisture. And usually we can tell by looking in the attic whether we have water in the crawl space.
By looking for those signs.
By looking for signs of moisture in the attic, it very often will be coming from the crawl space.
Okay. Hank Spies is here with us. We will continue in just a minute. We got a couple of callers who we have on hold. We will get right to. We hope that the programs that we do with Hank help you out. Now you can help us out in a very direct kind of way. Jack Brighton is here. Host of Focus 580, former producer. He's now our web guy.
Producer emeritus.
Producer emeritus.
That's the title I like.
And someone who still takes a very strong proprietary interest in Focus 580. So what are we going to tell people to get them to call us and give us some money? That's the bottom line.
Help us keep it going. Your pledge call right now, 217-244-9455, makes a huge difference. We got to keep this thing going. I mean, it's too important. It's all these shows that have to do with the practicalities of life, like Hank Spies. He's been doing the show for 27 years.
23.
Oh, well, okay.
Not quite 27.
Yeah. And, we don't exactly offer an honorarium for his time in here, but the reward is helping the community. So we need your help to help us keep doing that with your pledge call, 217-244-9455. And, it's really funny because we do this very strange thing here. We actually plan ahead. So the money we raise this year, it goes into the budget for next year. And so in a very real sense, your contribution now makes it possible for next year to happen for us. And if we don't raise the money, it's just that's the way it is. We got to pay the bills. So your pledge call, 217-244-9455. And we also, this is kind of a chilly, rainy morning, and I've got my coffee mug in front of me right here. We have some awesome coffee mugs that we're offering. We'd like to mug you if you make a contribution. I promise the volunteers won't mug you, but we'll offer you. This is really bad, isn't it? Let's check in with David Teal, who's with the people answering the phones in our pledge center, and tell us a bit more. Actually, these mugs are really kind of unbelievably cool.
And yes, that was a very bad pun.
Thank you.
Yes, as a matter of fact, it's public broadcasting, so we love our mugs. We have several to choose from, and the one I really want to talk about is this new 25th anniversary morning edition mug. It has a 25th anniversary logo, which if you haven't seen it, it's a cup of coffee with a 25 kind of rising out of it as in the form of steam. It's a silver and red logo. It's on a black matte finish mug. It's very stylish, very nice, 16-ounce ceramic mug, and that's available at the $80 membership level. But we also have the WILL AM Information Advantage mug with a logo with the kind of the microphone and the world and, kind of sums up what WILL AM is about. And that's, again, a ceramic mug also available at the $80 level. And then if you prefer your coffee on the road, we have the WILL AM FM TV stainless steel travel mug. And nice, big, tall, silvery black mug, and that's available at the $75 level. So make sure that your coffee doesn't spill and that you show your support or demonstrate your support for WILL to everyone who's in your car.
Now, I sense people out there asking themselves, where do I call to get these mugs?
Oh, well, that's very easy. You call 217-244-9455. Make that call to the volunteer. Make sure you let them know that you're interested in one of the gifts, one of the mugs. If you make a pledge at the $80 level, you qualify for any one of those mugs. So Well, I'm sure, you know, we could work out some arrangement if you want all three. But right now, the important thing is to call 244-9455.
Absolutely. Right. Well, you know, and the most important thing is to support the program, Focus 580. The show has been on the air for 23 years, something like that.
Something like that.
David just groans when he thinks about it. You know, but the truth is that this is a show that gives you access to, you know, newsmakers, you know, great thinkers, writers, people who are doing, you know, all kinds of incredible research on policy and science and, you know, culture, artists, and, you know, the practical programs we do on healthcare and home maintenance, et cetera, personal finance. So it's the kind of show that gives you a great deal of value. We hope you'll help us support that. Make your pledge call now, 217-244-9455.
All right. Thank you very much, Dave Teal and Jack Brighton. And we'll talk with you again in a little while. We have some callers who have been very patient with us. We will get right to them. If you'd like to call in here to the program, talk with Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. It's our monthly show on home maintenance. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. The next caller is in Wellington, and that's on our toll-free line, line 4. Hello?
Yes, you've spoken about putting the plastic down the crawl space. I'm interested in knowing what might be the ramifications if you did that, if you're in an area where termites are a problem.
Shouldn't have any effect on the termites at all. The main thing that we want to be sure of is that there is no wood, paper scraps, whatever, in the crawl space, which could get wet and attract termites, but it would have no effect whatsoever on the termites.
Or they would not tend to migrate from other locations to this wetter-than-usual spot?
No, because termites are attracted by wet wood. They are put on earth to dispose of wet, rotting, old, dead wood, and they don't care how it died, whether you cut it down to make a house out of it or whether it fell down in the forest. But they can smell wet wood for a couple of blocks and will go to it. So this is why we want to get rid of any wood, cardboard, things like this in the crawl space that might possibly attract them. But the plastic has nothing to do with it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Urbana, line number one is next. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. Thanks for taking the call. Mm-hmm. I have a footing tile problem for Mr. Spies. Recently I had the sanitary sewer redone, and we discovered that in the mid-50s they were hooking the footing tile to the sanitary sewer, which of course is illegal now, so it was disconnected. The footing tile was full of roots, and of course we could see that when we ran the camera through the sanitary sewer.
Mm-hmm.
We've solved the sanitary sewer problem, but of course now my footing tile doesn't have anywhere to go. I suppose that the thing to do would be to hook it up now to the storm sewer. There is plenty of fall for that. I've checked with the city, and there's plenty there. But my question is, how does one keep roots out of the footing tile?
It's very difficult. The only thing I can think of is to go buy some cheap copper sulfate crystals occasionally. Are the downspouts hooked to the footing tile or anything like that?
No, they're up in near the surface.
Okay. The only thing that I know of will keep roots out is copper sulfate, because roots, tree roots and so on, do not like copper. And that's the cheapest thing, but how you get it in there is something else again.
The footing tile drain goes out the north side of the house, and on the south side of the house I have a sort of a standpipe that goes down to the footing tile so I can monitor the conditions. Now, I were to put some sort of a valve to temporarily block the exit of the water from there, put the copper sulfate then through this standpipe and let it set for a few days and then flush it out, would that do the job?
It would do an awful lot toward discouraging them and getting rid of some of the roots that were there. Of course, you can run the Roto-Rooter through it, and it will cut the roots out, but that would have to be done periodically. If we can convince the roots that there's copper there and they don't want it, why, that'll keep them out for longer.
Yeah, and of course, the footing tile is set in gravel, which makes it efficient, but of course makes it for the roots to get in pretty quick.
Yeah.
So that's what we do, put copper sulfate in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And is it possible to seal, you know, get a temporary valve for this footing tile? Is that done?
Well, you can. I don't see any reason why it couldn't be done. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be much. Basically, a piece of sheet metal you can slide down between the joints and the tile will do it.
Yeah. Hmm. So, but the alternative is just to put copper sulfate in this standpipe as to the directions, and that would take care of it.
That would help.
We wouldn't even need a valve.
Probably not.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Right. Pease.
Very good. Thanks for the call.
Bye.
We'll keep on here, and our next person in line is over in Normal, line number two.
Hello.
Yes.
I live in a house that's about 130 years old and has had lots of settling, of course, over the years. But just recently, there's been, I think, a problem with my foundation. And in the basement, it's clear that the foundation is really just kind of a hump of earth with about 2 feet of brick on top of it. So it doesn't go down all the way that modern foundations do. And one corner of my house, I think, is listing rather significantly. And I don't know who the right person to call is to see about getting repair.
Well, if you look and check with someone who does mud jacking.
Mud jacking?
Yeah. What they do is drill in under the foundation, pump in a concrete slurry, and raise things back up, and then it will set and hold there.
Okay. And that's something that's going to be in the Yellow Pages?
Probably.
Okay.
Maybe concrete, under concrete raising, or many of the masonry companies do offer mud jacking.
Okay. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Next is back to Urbana, and that's line number three. Hello.
Hello. I have a question about exterior cellar doors. I suppose the ideal solution would be steel, but it's difficult to get to the location. About 10 years ago, I built some out of exterior plywood, and they seemed to hold up pretty well until a couple of years ago. I had, about 2 or 3 years ago, I put styrofoam on the inside, glued it to it, and I'm wondering if that accelerated rot.
Well, it kept the wood from drying out from the back side, but when you get that plywood to make those out of, you should get foundation-grade plywood, which is pressure-treated plywood and won't rot.
Hmm. Well, nobody suggested that. I guess that's what I should do then. Would deck paint be superior to stain? The stain looked nice, but...
Not necessarily, as long as you keep the stain up pretty well. You're going to have to do it every 2-3 years.
I seem to have to do it every year, but
Well, you know, it's almost a horizontal surface. And,
very nearly. Mm-hmm.
The water tends to lay on it and so on. Deck paint would probably peel.
Ah.
So that's why I would prefer a stain. Anytime on plywood, I prefer a stain to a paint.
Okay. Then I'll go back to the stain. What was I going to ask? Oh, it probably might be better to rig up something underneath, say 6 inches or so below, and put the plywood across the entire, not plywood, but styrofoam across the entire doorway, but not attach it to the door.
Well, you can always, I presume there's an interior door as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Just put your styrofoam on that.
Well, I'd like to keep the space up around 50 degrees because I store plant roots and things there. And
okay.
It would be nice to keep it warm.
Yeah, because that's about your normal soil temperature.
I've got about 1.5 inches of styrofoam on each side of the cement down about 4 feet.
Yeah, no, that should do it.
Okay, I'll try that strategy.
All right.
Thank you much.
Thank you. Let's go to another Urbana person. This is line number one. Hello.
Yeah, in terms of dehumidifiers in the basement, is it a good idea not to, does it bother if you shut them off for the winter, or should they be?
Well, you probably won't need it in the winter time.
Right, but sometimes even in the late fall, is it a good idea to still keep them on or not?
Yes, if you have them set at some reasonable, you know, if you set them at 45 or 50%, there's no reason why you can't run them, because I don't think they will run all winter.
Right. But, I mean, it doesn't, you know, I know you always talk about moisture in, you know, in the basement or down.
Yeah. Well, we don't want in, if one of the strange things about it is that moisture moves by vapor pressure, not air movement, so it doesn't make any difference where the dehumidifier is. The dehumidifier in the far corner of the basement dehumidifies the bedroom on the second floor.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. So this is something I've actually wondered about, having a sort of a damp basement myself, and wondering, well, is there an advantage in trying to figure out where the dampest part in the basement is and put the dehumidifier right there? It doesn't matter.
Whatsoever.
Doesn't
no
matter.
Difference.
So I could put it in the farthest corner of the basement away from where the dampest part was, and it would not make any difference.
Right. Mainly you put it where there's a convenient drain so you don't have to keep emptying the thing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Okay, very good. Then we'll go on to Matt Toon, line number 4. Hello. The caller there, line 4.
Hello.
Yes, hello.
Yes, let me turn my radio. I just tuned in long enough to hear Hank talk about an attic fan that you run in the summer to kind of help cool off your attic. And I thought I heard him say something about maybe you ought to run it in the wintertime. Is that correct?
Yes. It doesn't have to run continuously. We like to put a timer on them that runs 1 or 2 minutes every half hour.
And would it help if I just turned it on once a week?
Once a week isn't going to do much for you.
Isn't going to do much.
No.
Okay, it needs to be oftener than that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, there's a switch here in the living room, and you know, on the light switch thing that I just mm-hmm. turn it on in the summer and leave it on all summer.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't want to leave it on constantly all winter.
No, you don't want to leave it on constantly all winter, but it helps to, even once a day would help if you ran it for 5 minutes once a day.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right, very good. And to El Paso, Illinois, line number 2, right here. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I got a situation where the plumber, I have an addition that was put on that was put on a slab, and then I had the on the other side a crawl space. And when the plumber ran pipes through both a gas line and a flexible gas line and copper piping through into the crawl space, I mean into the add-on slab, they left a bigger hole than the pipe that went through.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that mice get into the slab area, and I haven't really been able to prevent that, it appears. But they then get into the crawl space through these holes, I believe. Mm-hmm. So what could I do to seal those holes around those pipe? One of it's the copper, the other is there's a kind of a plastic over the flexible gas line.
Okay, well, basically it's a matter of packing around them with steel wool.
Okay.
The mice won't go through that. Now, on the copper pipe, wrap the copper pipe with a piece of plastic tape before you put the steel wool in. Otherwise, you can get some corrosion caused by the contact between the steel wool and the copper.
Okay. So, I can get that, just any plastic tape.
Right.
Okay.
But mice won't go through steel wool.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, we certainly have room for other callers here. We have about 10 minutes left with Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. You have questions about home maintenance, call us 333-9455. Toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, here, I guess, gives us an opportunity to talk about something you said that you've been getting a lot of calls from people about, and I'm sure at this time of year, it probably is something that's on people's minds, and that is gutters and keeping the leaves. What can you do to keep leaves out of them? There are a number of different systems that will do it. Some work better than others. Some are more expensive than others. What's your thought about gutter covers?
Well, basically, we've got about two different major varieties. One is a metal cover that sticks under the edge of the shingles, goes completely over the top of the gutter, and then curls around the outside edge. And it works on the same basis as a badly designed pitcher, in that it uses the surface tension of the water to pull it back around this curve, and anything solid, leaves, twigs, whatever, keep sliding on past the gutter, and the water itself is into the front edge of the gutter. Now, this seems to work pretty well. There are at least a half a dozen different varieties of that on the market, varying costs and so on. The next thing to look at would be one that just snaps into the top of the gutter and is basically screened. And it keeps things out too, but you may have to get stuff off the screen periodically because it will tend to stick. And if the slots are horizontal instead of round holes, you may have more problem with pine needles wanting to go through. Any of them may pick up a little bit of dirt in the gutter that needs cleaning out, the granules off the roofing, for instance, and so on. Probably the ones with the solid cover and the lip that brings the water back has less problem. Almost any of the others will have some problem with that, so we've got to have it so that we can flush out the gutter when we need to as stuff accumulates underneath. So the cost of these things varies all over the place. You can go down to your local big box store and buy gutter covers that snap on for as little as 50 or 60 cents a running foot. The one that is most widely advertised of the solid top ones usually is in the vicinity of $12 to $15 a foot. Now, of course, one you have to put on, one they are putting on, and so on. They're good. You have to remember, if you're not used to working on a ladder, don't try and put them on yourself. Hospital bills get expensive.
Well, and the kind that you're talking about, the kind that does this surface, works with the surface tension, can you actually do that yourself, or does that have to be professionally installed?
You can do it yourself.
Oh, yeah. If you knew what you were doing.
Yeah, you know what you're doing and you get the right product, yes, you can. Okay. You can do it yourself. And I don't know, I have, on my house, I've done taken the third alternative. I've taken the gutters off and go under the drip edge where the water drips off the roof, drips down, dug a trench about 8 inches deep, taper it back toward the house, lined it with solid plastic, put a tile in the bottom of it that goes off to a storm drain, and then cover the whole works with washed gravel. That way anything that falls down onto it, the water will go through the gravel, get down to the tile, and be taken away. And I haven't cleaned a gutter in 15 years.
Right. So that's yet another alternative.
It's a completely different thing. Now, of course, if you happen to like the kind of landscaping that requires dirt down there to grow all kinds of fancy flowers, okay, they don't grow in the gravel.
How wide, that is, how far out from the house does the trench go?
Well, generally speaking, I start with the plastic at the foundation and go out about 6 inches past where water dripping off the roof would fall.
Okay.
So it doesn't have to go out all that far.
All right. Well, we got another caller here. People have questions. You'd like to talk with our guest, Hank Spies, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Urbana is the location here of this caller, line one. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Mm-hmm.
What have you been able to find out about spray-on siding?
Very little.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it is apparently a material that high build coating, and much is going to depend upon what it is sprayed over.
Oh.
Because if what you're spraying it over moves with changes in temperature and so on, it's going to crack.
I see.
And
what surfaces are least likely to do that?
Well, steel moves a lot less than vinyl. Aluminum is somewhere in between. Wood probably moves less of all.
Yeah, well, it's wood, so.
But I have not seen any extensive testing of spray-on siding. It's a product that has not caught on very much, and I don't have any research data on it.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, thank you. This is not something that I've even heard of, spray-on siding.
Well, I have heard on it. As I say, basically it's a high-build spray-on material, and we don't really have any data as to how long it lasts and so on, but with any time you're working with a coating, you are dependent upon the substrate.
Yeah, right. I can
and
see.
And as
see
I say, it much depends as to how much that moves as to whether it's going to stay without cracking.
Hmm. Would you then end up with something that just that sort of looked like what had been on there before, or is it you're ending up with something that's kind of a stucco-like
It all depends. It varies. You can get it in a stucco-like finish. You can get a smooth, fairly smooth finish if you want. But as I say, I've seen nothing to indicate to me that it's something I want to recommend.
Yeah, okay. Well, again, we have time for some other callers. We have Hank Spies here, and if you want to give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. We'll just bring you right to the show here. Again, we're asking people to make contributions to the station, but if you call here, you'll just come to the program, just like always, and we won't expect any money from you when you call in to talk with Hank. Maybe let me ask you again. I'm sure that this is also one of those things we get a lot of questions about as we change seasons, and that is painting, exterior painting. And when you get to the point where you would suggest to people that it's too late, and it has to do with the temperature.
If it goes below 50, I would not do an exterior painting.
Okay. And if it goes below 50 any time, so
within the drying time of the paint.
Yeah, okay. So we're probably past that point now.
Toward the end of this week, it's supposed to get up in the 70s again, so you... last chance.
Okay, if you're going to paint, get ready. Get your brushes, get your rollers, get your paint. This may be your last opportunity this year. Bloomington, Illinois is next, line 4. Hello.
Hello, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My wife and I have a house that's a little bit over 100 years old, and we have a back door that is starting to, you know, sort of lean out a little bit, and we've already re-drilled holes. We did this last summer, and we're kind of wondering at what point do you determine that you need to replace the entire door frame, and if we need to do that, is that something best left to a professional, or is that something that we could possibly do?
Well, if you have to ask, leave it to a professional. And, you know, it all depends. Apparently something is rotting, so I would do a little bit of probing with a slim screwdriver or an ice pick and see what's moving. But I would guess that you had some rot in there that was allowing this door frame to move.
Yeah, when we re-drilled it last summer, we used 3.5-inch screws, and we put in, you know, into new areas. But we're thinking that, I mean, this is the original door and the original frame area. We're thinking that it might just be rotted all the way down to the end, because it took us a while to find a decent place where when we were rehanging it, that it would actually grip and grab onto the to the screws.
Yeah, you're probably going to have to pull out all the rotted wood, replace it.
And is that usually like for one door? I know it depends on who you go to, but like in a ballpark range, if we had a carpenter do it, like in the $400 to $500 range?
Probably.
Probably, that's including the door and the labor and everything?
Well, you can spend that much on a door. It depends on what kind of door you want.
Oh, that's true. Okay. Well, it looks like we're going to be calling a carpenter then, so.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
All right, thank you. And here's one more in Urbana, line 1. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
We're finishing our attic, and as a part of that, we're insulating the space between the rafters and the ceiling of the attic. And I understand that you need to leave an air space between that insulation and the roof above so that you don't damage the roof. I've talked to a couple of different roofers in terms of putting in ridge vents to get circulation. We have ventilation coming up from the eaves already. And one of them says you have to do that right away because wintertime is a dangerous time. The other one says, no, you can wait until spring because it's really summer when the problem is.
Well, actually, the problem is more likely to occur in the winter than it is in the summer.
Uh-huh.
So if you're going to put a ridge vent on, now's the time.
Okay. Can you explain what is actually happening? What is it that causes the problem?
Basically, any moisture that gets in the house condenses on any cold surface.
Right.
So that if it goes through and condenses on the bottom of the roof sheathing, you can rot the sheathing. So
right.
What we are doing is bringing ventilation air from the outer edge, from the eave edge, and bringing it out the top through the ridge vent.
Uh-huh. And in summertime, it would just be warm, and it wouldn't condense on the underside
right.
of the roofing.
Right.
Okay, good. Thanks for your help.
All right. Well, at that, we will leave it for this time around with our thanks to Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He is here every month on a Monday, the first hour. We've been doing this for a long time here, and we just hope we've helped some people out. I've actually learned a few things. I don't know as much as Hank does, but I can give you a 5-minute lecture on a number of topics now because I have learned and I have heard Hank give this lecture so many times. So we hope that some of the people listening have over the years have gotten some benefit from Hank being
here. Oh, we hope so. As I talk to people out in the community, I find a lot of people that have listened to it and have tried some of the things that we've done.
All right. Well, I thank you very much, and we will see you next month.
All right.
We appreciate it. We have now here a couple minutes before we get to our market update to go to the people who are listening and to just lay it right out and say if this program has benefited you, if others that you have heard on Focus have benefited you, if it's important that you can get up in the morning and have Morning Edition and in the afternoon have All Things Considered and Afternoon Magazine and everything else in between, all of these programs need your support. It is very important. Over time, we've had less and less of that federal and state money coming in. And of course, the expenses go up. It costs more to maintain the equipment and buy stuff that's state-of-the-art and to pay the dues that we have to do to National Public Radio to get the programming. You know, that all costs money. And when those costs go up, there's only one place that we can go, and that is to people who use the service. And in fact, we think that's actually the way that it should be. It should be primarily supported by people who use it. So if you are a supporter of WILL, we want to say thanks. If not, now's the time for you to make a call. Dave Teal is our program director for WILL Television, and he is in Pledge Central.
Good morning. It's good to be here.
We appreciate you giving us some of your time. How's things going there this morning?
Well, things are fine. Now, we had a challenge earlier this morning. We were trying to get to 50 listeners of Morning Edition, and we didn't quite get there. So we want to get the phones ringing now at 244-9455. We've got a goal today. We're looking for $14,000 today in support of the WILL radio service. And I believe we're at about 4,000 and change so far. So that's off to a good start. But, you know, obviously a lot of work needs to be done. And we need to get the phones ringing right now at 244-9455. I know, you know, I've done this program a couple of times just as a fill-in host, and I know how difficult, how much work there is involved in it. Just, you know, you actually have to read the book.
Well, we try. People, the guests over and over again say, you actually read the book. Well, I guess we sort of feel that we owe that to the guest to try and the audience try to prepare and to do the best interview we can. We think that's one thing that maybe separates this program from others of its ilk. But in any case, what we want people to do is to go and make a telephone call and make a pledge of support to the station. Dave, we got to go here. I just want to remind people that the broadcast is made possible with support from Orange Taxi, a new taxi company providing services to the U of I campus and the Champaign-Urbana area 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 367-8888, and the broadcast made possible by Eastern Rug Gallery, offering a wide selection of guaranteed hand-knotted Oriental and Persian rugs of every size and color combination from new to antique, complement any decor. Eastern